Hello and welcome to Not a Safe Space. This is Sabrina.
And Tabby.
Hey girl, what's going on?
Not much. How are you?
Doing well, trying to stay warm.
I know, it's cold. We need a blanket for episode 18.
I know. Welcome to episode 18, everyone. What's going on over there? Are you enjoying this cooler winter weather?
I am, right up until the point I have to go outside and take care of an animal.
Really? Last night we sat out by the fire pit with blankets and watched like The Walking Dead out in our neighbor's backyard. And I enjoy the winter part of that up until you can't feel your legs anymore. And then we all decide It's no longer fun.
No, that's bad.
Right.
With hypothermia.
That's right. How are you doing with your Christmas shopping?
What Christmas shopping?
I bought another thing for, first of all, my son having a girlfriend, easiest thing in the world. I could shop for a teenage girl all day long.
Nice.
If gift quantity is going to come into play, everybody's going to think that Amaris is my favorite. It's just easy for me to shop for a teenage girl.
Well, yeah, you guys are both basic.
Yeah, right. Hey, there's nothing basic about Amaris either. She's a pretty unique individual. I'll take the basic title though. So I've done a little bit of shopping for her, a little bit for Lorelai, and that's it. Oh, I got my nieces out. But besides that, I need to get on the ball.
Yeah, I'm totally taking your idea from last week and doing Amazon Prime, and that's how it's getting done this year.
Nice. It's smart. And then we have our ladies' wine night Santa gift exchange.
Oh, yes, we do. Yes.
Coming up, which is fun. So also, why don't you go ahead and plug for our bookworms where they, if anybody's in need of a gift, Tabby's got the perfect gift for a bookworm. Go ahead. I do.
So if you are a bookworm or part of a book club, you could always make the suggestion as well. It's called The Burden of Trust. It is a story about an arrogant actor who accidentally falls head over heels for a lesbian who has a dark and twisted past. It is the beginning of a trilogy, and it is available on Amazon. It's available in e-format and paperback, and yeah, so check it out.
Great idea, and I love to get books as Christmas gifts. Do you get books?
No, I don't get books.
You don't.
Nobody buys me books.
I'm so picky. Oh, you are.
I am. I'm very picky because I read what I write. So if I'm writing romance, I need to be reading a romance novel. And it has to be in third person. It can't be in first person because then it like fucks with my head. It's just, it's kind of weird.
Okay. I like to read kind of just like my own life, of a wide variety of shit, whether it's an easy read just to get me on one plane ride or to sit by the pool. There's a great book about narcissism and social media that I've read, or how social media destroyed a couple people's lives was a great book. You don't think about that. One tweet can completely unravel somebody's life and the after effects of that. That was a good book.
Kind of like the hashtag, the Hyman Gate.
Exactly. How quickly that, you know, and it, how everything can unravel. So I do like little surprise books of what to read, whether or not it's going to be in depth. Like this Scientology book I read, that shit took me forever. Because it was like a fucking Bible. And it was so factual that it just took a long time. And then after that you need a quick and easy read.
Exactly. I don't know how you made it through that. I would have just thrown it out the window.
Oh God. I find it so interesting why people do certain things, why people behave in a certain manner. And it makes sense once you start to realize people's childhoods and their own parents and how, God, we could fuck anybody up.
Oh yes. Have you ever read Sun Tzu?
No. What's that?
You need to read it. It's it is a really, really awesome book. I'm trying to see if I can find it in my bookshelf right here, show you a picture of it. But it's called The Art of War. So it's Sun Tzu, The Art of War. It is a It's a very hard read because it's pretty much in broken English, but it is so factual about you can use the tactics of war in everyday life. I know as weird as that may sound, but it's it actually has some really, really good points in it.
Oh, yeah, here, I see it. The Art of War, Original Classic by Mitch Horowitz.
The one I have is by Samuel Griffith. This is what it is, Sun Tzu.
Okay, cool. I'll look that up. I'll write it down.
Yep. It's really, really good. Again, it's a hard read because you have to pretty much dissect almost every sentence and kind of figure out what they're meaning by it and use it in a war scenario and then kind of translate it in your brain how you would actually be able to use it. But
it's yeah, really that's what good. The definition or the brief review says, that it's an ancient Chinese military tactic dating to the late spring and autumn period, and then how you would use that in your current life, which, what a fascinating way to think, right? I mean, I'm very deliberate in the choices I make, which we're getting into personalities today. So that would probably be a very good book for me and put me in a great place of power if I'm thinking as a military militia.
Okay, maybe you don't need to read the book. Sorry, you already have enough power. I mean, goodness, you're trying to start your own fucking cult. I need help with this craziness.
I know. So, hey, speaking of craziness, where's my little old lady?
Your old lady?
Yeah, hold on. I have this article that I found yesterday about this 82-year-old grandma. Here, I'll just pull it up on my phone because I sent it to one of my friends too. This 82-year-old grandma, 82-year-old weightlifting grandma puts her home intruder into the hospital.
Oh, nice.
So talk about women protecting themselves. Grandma here could deadlift 225 pounds.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And on November 21st, her home was broken into. There was a man at her door pounding on the door at 10:30 or 10:53 at night, asking to be let in. Call the police. Help me. Let me in. And she said, fuck you. I'm not doing that. Well, then the man broke the door down and came inside and started attacking her. And she said, young man is in my home, broke the door. And you know what? It's kind of dark and I'm alone and I'm old. But guess what? I'm tough. The intruder soon realized a troubling fact. He picked the wrong house to break into, she said. I picked up the table and went to work on him.
Oh, my God.
She beat this dude with a table. It said.
Good for her.
Right. After she got the man on the ground, she began jumping on him and grabbed a bottle of shampoo and squirted it in his eyes.
Wow.
Yes. How cool is that? Talk about women protecting women and making sure that even at 82 years old, that somebody's not going to invade your space and harm you and attack you.
That's really empowering.
She beat him with the broom, Tabby.
She beat him with the broom?
Right. And then he was trying to get the heck out of there.
Well, I bet. He was getting his ass beat by an old woman.
She said he's laying down already because I really did a number on that man. I'm serious. He was taken away by ambulance and later arrested. How awesome is that? 82 years old.
Wow.
Fucking whacked him with the table.
That's crazy. I love it, though.
Right? I mean, that just shows there's no excuses. As long as you're kind of taking care of your body or taking care of your surroundings of whether or not, you know, you own a gun in your home or whatever it might be. Come on, motherfucker. I dare you to come through that door.
Right. I dare someone come through my door.
Right. So I'm
not. Between the dogs and the artillery.
Artillery, I think.
Yes, that word.
Mm-hmm. We'll find out. So yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
That is, I like it.
Yeah. So going on to some other stuff, I have another topic I want to talk to you about. Oh, well, first I want to talk to you. I've had this on my list of things to talk to you for the last few weeks. Kim Kardashian. How do you feel about Kim Kardashian?
In regards to what?
Just her in general. Do you know any of the new things that she's been up to lately?
I know she was part of the prison reform that Trump had signed in, which was to get prisoners who were put away for really misdemeanors.
Yeah, like that really marijuana and...
Right, and she was a big part of that. I heard somewhere along the line she's going to get her law degree.
Yeah, so she is attending law school with the intent to open her own law firm that specializes in helping either underprivileged, innocent individuals or along with the prison reform of getting these people that have been in jail since the three acts or three strikes law that put a lot of people overpopulated our prisons to get those people out. How do you feel about her doing that? Do you take it seriously or not?
I don't know at this point. Right now, when she has a law office and she starts doing what she says she's going to do, great. Mm-hmm. But and if it just dwindles and disappears, okay. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not... I like that she's trying to do something to better our society instead of just being an entertainment star. Right. Or just being Hollywood getting on a stage and whining about the injustice of the world, but not actually doing anything.
Like, she's actually putting in the work. She's
right. She's going to get a fucking law degree. Now, as long as she earns it legitimately and she doesn't go and buy one, you know, we're good.
Right. And I think, so there was an article the other day, Rodney Reed, she was sitting with Rodney Reed, who is in Texas in prison. He was sentenced to death for the murder of Stacy Stites, I think is her last name. He claims that he is innocent, and she was with him when he got the phone call that he was given. What is it called? Stay of execution, 120-day execution. So they were just interviewing her for what that moment was like. I can't imagine what that moment was like when he found out that he was at least given 4 months to still live, right? 4 months to prove that he's innocent. And when she did that, a couple members of the Innocent Project said, well, she just loves to be on TV. But, you know, there's other people doing the work. And the Innocence Project and another attorney stood up and said, she's been here. She's been in the office. She's been reading the documents. She is doing the work. And for that, just like you said, if it was just a show and let me put my face on it, I really appreciate what she's doing and that. And I hope that the world allows her to reinvent herself, right? She's no longer a 20-year-old socialite just trying to get TMZ to publish her picture. She is taking that platform and using it for good and getting results.
Yes.
And she deserves the credit just as much as I think Donald Trump deserves the credit for signing that piece of legislation in. She deserves the credit for being involved in that, and her husband does as well. She also posted that, there's a new article out that just came out yesterday that she has changed her wardrobe because she realized that
slutting it up doesn't work in the corporate world.
Well, yeah, well, that's what she said. She said, I can't dress like this in the White House and then post bikini selfies the next day. Like, if I'm going to hold my, I need to improve the way that I'm presenting myself if I want to be taken seriously. So I'm glad that she realizes that and she's not dressing the same way and then saying, well, why won't anybody take me seriously?
Right. She's not being an Elizabeth Banks.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. She's saying, you know, this is what's more appropriate for her age and her career and the fact that she's a mother now. I also like that she is raising young Black men. And so that mm-hmm. her purpose is different, right? Like she wants to make sure that these people that she's visiting in prison, that her own children don't suffer that same consequence, or his peers right. or whoever it might be. So I loved all of that. And I just hope that women will allow her to have this journey and respect her for it.
So you're going to have women that are open-minded and go, okay, but then you're also going to have women that immediately are going to judge her because she built her platform based off of her sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
She sold sex.
Right.
That's, you know, and so a lot of people are going to not respect her for that now that she's wanting to move into this different field.
Right.
I mean, it's very similar to what was that? You know, they were like, if you ever wanted to go into politics as a kid, oh, if you ever want to be a president, don't do anything bad because it'll come back to bite you. Right.
Yeah. Well, that's not true anymore.
Well, no.
Right.
But, well, you know, back in the day.
Right.
I mean, so there can be a lot of people that are very hesitant.
Right.
So, and you know, I have my doubts. Right. But because of the platform she's created, I'm going to be really honest. I never really watched any of her shows or anything of that just because of the image she portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
So I would never really take her seriously. Now, if she goes and she's changing herself, she's reinventing herself, and she proves herself to be this woman who is going to be out there and helping people and making a change and do, hell yeah, backing her ass up. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I would love to see her as a strong female civil rights attorney and become somebody strong and be able to show younger females that, yeah, you can become anybody who you want to be. Like, she has reinvented herself.
Mm-hmm.
And the sex tape wasn't her choice to put out, but it was put out. And then that molded her life and became this thing. And that she's working her way out of that. And just like any journey we all have, that we allow her that space to do it. On the other side of that, Taylor Swift performed at the AMAs. I know you saw on Twitter that the AMAs were trending. I'm not a Taylor Swift fan because of the opposite. I think she's too pure and too clean. And for me, I always felt like I could not respect her as a woman when I saw her as a girl with all these girl problems. You know, her problems came from heartbreak and boys and all of this. But, you know, Kim Kardashian, on the other hand, who I'm still not truly a great fan of, I like what she's doing, but she went through a scandal sex tape and drunken moments and all these other mistakes in front of people's faces that made her
mm-hmm.
more real to me. That when I watched Taylor Swift receive her award, that I had to allow her that respect, that she has been in this industry for so long, that I saw women across the audience of all ages singing her songs and being able right. to connect to some of these bubblegum songs that have made a difference. And so where I'm typically an asshole to more of a purist, that I had to right. see my own fault in that.
Right. I mean, Taylor Swift has been singing for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so crazy.
About a decade and a half, yeah.
When I think of Taylor Swift, I still think of Taylor Swift with a guitar, not right. a fucking crew behind her dancing.
Which right? she's a terrible dancer, by the way.
Well, yeah.
I watched the video and I sang with the songs, but goodness gracious, she needs some hips on her. But anyways, keep going.
But so, I mean, I don't see her as an adult. And right. I probably never will see her as an adult until she starts moving into more adult things. But let's be really honest. Why would she? She has created a platform. She makes billions of dollars singing teen songs.
Mm-hmm.
And it works.
Right.
And it's moved into the next generation. So as we have grown up, her little peppy songs still make us happy. And even as 30-something-year-olds, we're still listening to it. So,
right.
I mean, she found what works for her, and that's great.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And I think if you give yourself the moment, I have about three favorite Taylor Swift songs. One is called Enchanted. The other is called The Last Time, which I associate more. She's singing to a guy, but I associate more to maybe my mother, where it says that I'm knocking on your door for the last time. And for the last time, I'm giving you this opportunity to hurt me. And please choose not to. Where, like, that song to me, it was like, wow, like, listen to, like, the desperation in her voice where I could connect to that. Or she's got this other song, Enchanted, where she says, you know, that you just meet somebody and there is this enchanting feeling about it. And that's the only time you meet them and that person's gone in your life. And I've had those moments too, where I've met somebody and been like, wow, that there was something there, but it's not meant to be. And it's not, and it was just this moment in time and how I could connect with this young girl, like you said, still this girl in my mind. And then there one other song where she says something about, could I have just lost the love of my life? Like, I'm a romantic and I think about that kind of stuff all the time. So there's moments in her song, if you're willing to turn off your bias, my own bias to her, and actually listen to the words, where I'm like, well, this is why people fucking like her. It might sound cheesy. She might look ridiculous.
But she's making fucking shit ton of money. And I'm sorry. Yeah, no average Joe person would say, I'm not doing that for that money. They're crazy.
Right.
They sign up. And I think the only thing that recently has annoyed me was she was angry that she wasn't allowed to sing some of her old songs at some event. And
at this event, at the AMA.
Okay. Right. And she was really upset about it, saying how unjust that it was. And, you know, that I can't sing what I want to sing. And I was going, and someone's response was very, very interesting. Goes, you don't own the rights to those songs anymore. You sold them for a shit ton of money.
Right.
So unless you're willing to pay back that money, you don't get to whine about how unfair and unjust. You signed a contract.
Yeah, I saw that too. I had a hard time getting behind it and feeling upset for her. Just more because, look, like, business is business. And we all sign contracts. And there's certain ways that you can perform or behave, or certain things you can say. And that's life. And you're not the first person where contracts and rights to your own work has been an issue. So please don't try to make it an issue. You, like you said, you signed a contract and you made money.
Exactly. Writers go through this all the time.
Right.
Sorry.
Right.
You have to retain the rights to your work, and you didn't because you chose the paycheck. Hey, that's on you.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. Also, just circling back to the Kim Kardashian thing, I would like to say that I watched, I was all by myself this weekend. So I watched a documentary called 3.5 Minutes that, and I'm only circling back to Kim K because she's a mom of young black men, is that it's called 3.5 Minutes, 10 Bullets. And I had mentioned an incident on our Women Protecting Women about a murder that happened here in Jacksonville. Right. It was the 2012 shooting of Jordan Davis. And that's what this documentary is about. And I recommend that anybody go and watch it if you're a mother of teenage sons, if you're whether they're white or black, because I kept thinking that in my head, that if this car had pulled up about, and it was my son and his friends, they would still be alive. That, you know, because of this gentleman's unconscious bias and maybe some alcohol, this young black teen was killed, and it happened right here in our hometown. And it made me sad and realize that I can keep talking about how I support black men and black families all I want. But in 2012, 2015, when this was being finally went to court, and there were Black Lives Matters and mothers and fathers, black men and women outside the courthouse, that I was sitting inside the safety of my own home, and that I would like to see myself be out there arm in arm with them instead. because I can see it from somebody else's side, that these four young boys were just listening to loud music and the guy told him to turn it off and pulled out a gun and all this other stuff and then lied and said that there was a weapon in the car and there wasn't, and, you know, said that they were thugs and hood rats. Well, they grew up in the suburbs. Like, it didn't happen in a bad part in Jacksonville. It happened by Tinseltown. Like, this is, it was his own presumption. He perceived them as gangsters, where I make those same mistakes. So it's just watching that, that's where I felt for the mother. And then I felt like I could do better. I don't have to start a rally. I don't have to do this, but I could go up there and say that as a white woman of a teenage boy that I get it. I'll never truly have the same fears that they do, but I get it and I support them. And it's not just a black issue. It's all of our issues if we're killing our kids because we're scared and have these presumptions against them. So if you can go, if you're into documentaries and shit like that, it's on Netflix. It's called 3.5 Minutes, 10 Bullets. It's about an hour of your time. I loved it. Let's talk about pet peeves.
Oh, fun.
What are your, well, I have your pet peeve listed here.
Okay. You wrote, because I don't remember what my pet peeves are.
Well, you wrote your hubby not knowing your pet peeves.
Yeah, well.
So what are your pet peeves? And if you don't know, then I'm going to take Dion's side and say, how the fuck is he supposed to know?
Because he's just supposed to know.
You should see her face, Tabby. She's like, God damn, or Dion. He's like, she's like, God damn you, Sabrina.
So, I know. You're taking his side. He's so wrong. You're supposed to be supporting women.
Right. So tell me your pet peeves. So I'm just going to go ahead and go over the list of pet peeves. And then you tell me at the end if any of them pop out at you. Or just take a note if it makes you think of your pet peeve. So.
Okay.
Eye contact when having conversations, close-minded people, ugly toes and fingers, which I swear to God, I did not write that one. People talking loudly at the gym, people listening to loud music at the gym, chewing with your mouth open or smacking gum, people walking slowly in front of you, people on their phone at checkout, loud music on your earphones, and then loud music blaring out of the car. Any of those your pet peeves?
Definitely the eye contact, because I find that rude unless you have some, like, disability, right?
So you forgive somebody if they got, like, a wandering fucking eye, a lazy eye.
No, not even a wandering eye. No. The one good eye's got to be looking at you.
Okay, all right, good.
I'm talking about, like, someone who's, like, so anxious and, like, physically can't look at you because they'll throw themselves into a panic attack kind of deal. It's like, okay, I can kind of get by that. Chewing with your mouth open. Fucking have some manners.
That's what I wrote on here. Is that still a fucking thing? Have we not taught our children and generations by this point to chew with your mouth fucking closed?
No, because we don't teach our children fucking anything.
It's insane to me. I mean, I can't even imagine that that's still a thing to this day, that parents are out here not teaching their kids to chew with their mouth fucking closed.
Right.
Or that you could even be my age and be almost 40. Right. And somebody hasn't said, listen, I'm not doing dinner with you anymore if you're going to eat like a fucking cow.
Well, let me tell you what. When I was growing up, if I ate like that, my mother literally took my food and put it outside and said, you can eat outside with the dogs if you're going to act like one.
Yeah, our dinner, the way that I was taught dinner manners is we sat down at dinner every night. There was one to six of us at dinner. My dad sat at the head of the table. And first of all, we had to sit up straight. You weren't allowed to have your elbows on the table. Your napkin automatically went to your lap. We were only allowed to use a fork and a knife because, you know, spoons aren't actually proper when you're eating. We were only allowed spoons for soup. However, my dad had a spoon every night, so talking about hypocrisy there. This spoon was often used to fling it at us across the table if we forgot one of those manners. And whoever the worst at manners was at the time would dedicate who took the left chair next to him so that you were in smacking ability. Distance. Yeah, so I still remember and refused to do it that when I was eating, I always a glass of milk on the table. We were allowed one glass of milk at dinner until we finished our food. Is that I had my food, my fork in my hand, and I went like this.
Uh-oh.
And so now, ladies and gentlemen, I have a fork in my right hand and my glass in my left hand, and I took a smack to the face and was told that, you know, that that was not proper and that if I was thirsty, I needed to put my fork down. And I'll never fucking do it again.
No, you sure won't, will you?
Right. So it was not, there were flying objects at our dinner table to remind us what table manners look like.
Yet you're not supposed to throw things at a table.
Yeah. I mean, let's not get into the hypocrisy of my wonderful dad. But yeah, you're not supposed to throw things at all, really. But that's what, whoever got that end seat, he'd fucking fling a spoon over there in a second. And
he
also cut my hair off at dinner one time because I wasn't sitting up and my, which this is what makes me laugh when you said the other day that, that your mom was more strict than mine is that, or my parents is that I was not sitting up at dinner and my hair, you know, when you eat and you put your head down, which I constantly tell my kids about is my hair was falling down. And he had told me over and over again, where really all I needed to do was pull my hair back when I eat. He just got up, got a pair of scissors. I had no idea. Walked up behind me, grabbed my fucking head from behind.
And snipped it all off.
Cut it all off right there.
Wow.
I'll never have my fucking hair in my food again.
No, because you won't have any hair.
Right. Yeah, maybe that's why I won't grow it out. But, I mean, that's how I learned table manners. That's why I'm just amazed that people still chew with their mouth open.
But you have to remember what your dad did in those, when you were growing up, was considered good parenting.
It was, yeah.
Today, it's considered child abuse.
Right, right. So, and I'm thankful that I have good table manners when I need to have them.
Exactly. But the kids these days, they don't get any, they don't get the hard conversations. They don't get the, you're fucking up and there's going to be a consequence.
Right. Anything else on this list jumps out at you?
Okay. I hate it when people are walking slowly in front of you and then like they don't move over. They like spread their shit out. So they're so far across. They're like, oh, la-di-da, and you can't get by them. That annoys me.
So I have a star next to that too. And I think it was my uncle that posted that. So I think he's a taller gentleman. And I'm surprised because, see, I would have assumed that because you're shorter than me, that people walking slower in front of you isn't an issue because you can't keep up anyways. That's me being an asshole. But that's just my train of thought.
But no, you're wrong because I can walk really fucking fast.
I know. That's how fucking judgy I am of short people. But that is an issue for me. Like, I hate it. I walk fast, and I hate when there's somebody slow. Like, move over.
Just move over. That's all I'm asking. Just move over, or don't
take up. Yeah, walk on the right-hand side. We all know that, right? Get to the right.
It's like an asshole who stands in the middle of the escalator and doesn't let people walk by.
Right. I agree with that, too, especially on an escalator. It doesn't mean you have to take the ride.
No.
You have an option. Get to the right-hand side. Right. It's not a fucking ride.
Well, it is for me, but I give you room.
Right. What else do you got?
Of course, close-minded people.
Yeah. That's a big thing for me.
Yeah. So if I'm in a conversation with someone and they're just like, I'm like, okay, we're done. I don't want to talk to you anymore. Shut down. Go away.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I'm not put on this earth to change your mind about whatever.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I don't have time for that.
Right. Also, I feel like, you know, talking to a closed-minded person is pointless. You know, I have conversations with people to learn from one another. And if you're only sitting there in front of me to teach me, eat a dick. You don't need to school me. If you want to have an intelligent conversation where we're learning from one another, I'm down for that.
But I'm not going to have a conversation where you're going to make yourself feel better and more powerful by dictating shit to me. I can talk to a wall and get that.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, I have one more.
Okay.
I cannot stand it when you're talking to someone and everything you say, they have a counterpoint for no reason. Like, they're just like, no, that doesn't work. No. Do you know what I...
So argumentative?
So for no reason, just right. To be argumentative.
Yeah, just for the sake of arguing. Yeah, right. I find people like that frustrating.
Very frustrating.
Again,
like, you don't even want to talk to them.
Right, because again, nobody's going to get anything from that conversation besides frustration. So why would I voluntarily put myself in there?
Well, they are getting something out of it.
Right.
I don't know what it is.
Right. Well, it's ego and that they've...
Right.
Some people just like to hear themselves talk.
Yeah. They do.
Right.
Yeah. So when someone does that, by the second time, I'm like, I don't talk to them anymore.
Yeah. No, I agree. I select who I want to engage with. I don't even know how to say it, but I am selective of who I want to engage with as when it comes to being closed-minded. So you actually hit like my pet peeves, closed-minded people walking slowly in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And then people on phones at checkout. I can't stand that to me. So the lady, especially because people say like, will complain about the lady at the checkout. Well, she didn't say hi to me. She wasn't friendly. Well, what do you guys expect now? Most of the time, right. Somebody's on a phone and they're just a processor processing shit through. I always, right. if normally it's my husband I'm on the phone with, you know, towards the end of the day that mm-hmm. If I'm at the checkout, I always say, and I don't care if it's mid conversation, I don't mind talking throughout the grocery store, but when I get to checkout and it's my turn, I'll cut them off and say, I'll call you right back.
Right. I do the same thing.
Yeah. She deserves a hi. How are you? How's it going? I shouldn't be sexist about that. Deserves to be recognized.
Exactly. She's not a machine.
Right.
Now, it doesn't bother me if someone does it. But I don't do it because I'm like, all right, got to go talk to you later. And I'm like, I got to do this because one, you know, yes, you have to be respectful to the cashier. And then the other thing is I'm a freaking penny pincher. So I'm watching to make sure everything scans up correctly so I can catch an error before I'm looking at my receipt and then have to go to return it and blah. No, I don't want to deal with that mess. Let me just focus where I need to focus at that time.
I'm so bad. When I buy something in the grocery store, I don't retain the price. I don't look at the price when it rings up. And I don't care what they do with that receipt at the end. I could be getting fucking nailed and have no idea. No idea. It's not that I don't care. I would definitely care. Just in the moment, I've never been I just never fucking check. I'm terrible about that.
Wow. No, I know all the prices of everything that's in my cart. So I know right about how much something should be coming up and watching. And I'm like, hey, that was on sale for 85 cents, not a dollar.
Yeah, that's great. That's good. I never, like the other day I bought this mega pack of coffee K-cups. And mm-hmm. at Winn-Dixie, it said that they were buy one, get one free. And it was the big boxes. So now I'm paying like $20 for it. Well, it didn't ring up like that. And in my mind, I thought, well, listen, I could either say something and they can go back there and look. And then they're going to tell me that it was supposed to be the smaller boxes, but the sign's in the wrong place. They're either going to give it to me for $20 off or they're not. Do I really have time or do I just need my coffee for the next 3 weeks? So I didn't even say anything. I was like, whatever.
No. I would have been like, hey,
Nate would have killed me.
Yeah, I would be like, sorry, that is buy one, get one free. And they're, because they have all their coupons and stuff right up there. They don't have to look. Right. And they could have been like, oh no, it's this size. I was like, well, fine. You take that box and you put it back and I'll just take this one box and I'll go out and about my business. But I'm not spending more money because you misrepresented it.
Yeah, I'm terrible. I'm feeding the system. I'm helping that system along. I'm working against the cause. Are you guilty of anybody's, like, can you think of a pet peeve that you do or that might be on this list that you are guilty of, or a habit that you have that you know probably drives people crazy?
Oh, I'm sure of it. I just don't know what it is.
So I put on here that I was guilty of loud music on my earphones. When I am in an airport and I'm walking around, I don't want to be approached. So I have my earphones in and I like to listen to music loud. Right. And it doesn't even occur to me that other people can hear the sound coming out. And I'm not even sure if I really care. I'm going to be honest. I like to listen to it loud and I don't want to hear anything else. And I want it to be known that I don't want to engage with anybody. I don't want to talk to anybody. I'm listening to my loud ass Taylor Swift in my ears.
They are shaking it off.
Exactly. The other thing I do is loud music in the car, which my kids do. I mean, my kids love
music. How is that a pet peeve? Well, I guess if you've got the bass so fucking high that it's like, I hate it when that car pulls up and all you hear is thud, thud, thud.
What if it's just free falling? Yeah, we're free fall. And it's loud, but super loud. Where, let's be honest, maybe somebody doesn't like Tom Petty. Maybe I should just
keep it. Who doesn't like Tom Petty? What's wrong with you?
I don't know. But, you know, like, that's actually how the 3.5 minutes happened, is that those kids were listening to, let's just say, loud rap music, right? That gets a bad name. Is that
right?
There's some shit that Ethan listens to that I'm not a fan of. So if I'm guilty of the pet peeve because I love my music, but when some person pulls up next to me and it's crappy music and I'm like, ugh, can't they turn that down?
But that's perspective. That's all. That, I mean, your music may be crappy music to them.
Right. I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm guilty of it. And I'm bad about it. And I'm not stopping.
No, definitely not. I like my loud music too.
Right. I think that's really, I mean, I'm sure I have other pet peeves, like the way that I like to plan things out. If I'm going on vacation with somebody that is more laid back, that, you know, that planning can be obnoxious when some other people are like, you know, let go and just live.
Right.
My body was not made to do that.
Especially when you're traveling with a bunch of girls.
Yeah.
I have learned when you travel with a bunch of women to just be like, whatever. Let you bitches figure this shit out, because everyone's going to be like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Let you guys circle around, figure it all out. Let me know what the plan is and I'll see you there. That's it. That's all I need to know.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Now, I don't want an input.
Any pet peeves about your husband?
So I have a pet peeve that drives Dion crazy.
Okay, what is it?
So sometimes when he, like, it looks like something's wrong, I'm like, so are you okay? And he's like, yeah, I'm fine. And I'm like, well, what's wrong? And he's like, no, I'm okay. And then, like, 15 minutes later, you okay? He's like, yeah. 15 minutes later, what's wrong? He's like, God damn it, Tabby. Nothing. Right. You want something to be wrong because you want to fight, because that's what's going
to. Right, right.
Yeah. So I can be annoying like that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it's just overcaring, which has that actually has part to do with the personality test we're going to talk about later.
It is. We should jump right into that because we've got about 30 minutes left. So let's talk about. Tabby and I went to 16personalities.com and took a personality test. And we were going to talk about it a little bit. We both ended up with the same personality, right?
Yeah, a protagonist.
Yeah. Did you get certain letters on yours?
I did. I got ENFJ-A.
Okay. I think that's what I got too. Oh, hold on. Let me see. Yep. ENFJ-A.
Yep.
So, what did you think about the personality test? What stood out to you?
I liked it. So initially, when I saw it, the protagonist, I went, oh, well, that sounds really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then I, you know, then I started reading about it and I was like, oh, well, this sounds more like me. I liked, it basically said that I'm extroverted. I'm mostly intuitive, mostly about my feelings. Apparently, when it comes to tactics, I'm very judgy.
Mm-hmm.
And then my identity, I'm very assertive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's what I've gone through and kind of highlighted a few things is that, well, first of all, protagonist and specifically this level or abbreviation of it is only 2% of the population.
Yes.
Which I found was interesting is, and maybe sometimes why I don't feel understood is because yeah. I am different than other people. I like that it said, or it says that, protagonists are unafraid to stand up and speak when they feel like something needs to be said. This is something that I've always struggled with and talked to my own therapist about because mm-hmm. he always has to remind me that I don't wear a cape and I don't need to fight other people's battles and I don't need to stand up for injustice or whatever it might be
mm-hmm.
where I have a hard time silencing that.
Right.
It says protagonists easily see people's motivation and seemingly disconnected events and are able to bring these ideas together and communicate them with a common goal with nothing short of memorizing. So I wrote that I feel like this helps me deal with people that I'm in an argument with, right? Because I can always step back and say, look, I see it from your side.
Okay.
Whether or not I think it's wrong or right, I can see the other person's opinion, even if it's the wrong opinion of me or something against me. I always have the ability to go back and go, okay, I get it. I get how they could do that.
Right. We're very can analyze their feelings.
Right. Yeah. Then it says where this becomes an issue is, let's see, this tends to be a self-fulfilling, how do you say that?
Prophecy.
Yeah. Where our authenticity to inspire those who we care about becomes to better themselves. But if we aren't careful, we're overextending our optimism, sometimes pushing people away and further pushing them further than they're even willing to go. And I wrote that as one of my weaknesses because I do like to push people to be their greatest form of who they are, not for my own self, but because I see greatness in them. And if their personality doesn't match up with my pace or my expectations of them and what I believe in them, then I find myself disappointed in them where I shouldn't, right?
Right.
That makes it more about me than it does them.
Yes. And are you the same way as I am? So like when I was in the corporate world and I had, you know, employees, the ones that I really cared about, right? I was always busting their balls.
Right.
I was like, what are you doing? Why are you doing it this way? Come on. And they would complain to the other guys and go, why is she always on my ass? Like, it's just crazy. And then one girl explained it. It's like, don't you get it? She cares about you. She wants you to succeed. If she didn't give a shit, she'd let you fail.
Right.
Are you that same way?
Yeah, I am. Especially in somebody that I care about and I generally have feelings for, I want what's best for them.
Right.
I'm not somebody that likes to hold anybody down. And I'd like all of my friends to reach their greatest potential because I feel like they're doing a dissatisfaction to them. The mm-hmm. problem after reading this personality test is that maybe their personality doesn't allow them to do that. Maybe that right. personality in me turns them off of me.
Correct. So right? It makes me think about what the other part of it was saying, that we take their goals and make them our own.
Right, yeah.
Add a self deprivation to our own goals and whatever. And I do like the part where you're saying, you know, the way that we motivate doesn't work for everybody. So we could actually be unmotivating them.
Right.
Because of our tactics. Because right. we're all like, come on, let's go. You got this. Oh my gosh, this is awesome. Come on, let's go. Put in the work. Da, 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 da. And they're going, no, I don't want to do this anymore. Stop talking.
Right.
And you're like, what's the matter? And then now you get your feelings hurt because you put so much emotion into it.
Right. Yeah. And you're emotionally connected to it. I liked also on the summary portion where it says, that we are unlikely to be afraid to take the slings or arrows while standing up for the people and ideas that they believe in. Again, that kind of goes to, I'm willing to take any punch for any of my friends, physically, emotionally, whatever. If you want to say something hurtful, say it to me, not them. Right. I can take it, and I'm willing to take it for the people I care about. In the same position that I am with like my own mother, out of all my sisters, fine, be mad at me. Leave the little one alone. You know, she's a good person. I have faults, and you can find a ton of them to be mad at. Pick one of those, but leave my little sister alone. You know,
right.
I've always been that person that I ended a friendship with somebody because I saw her attacking somebody who I believe is mentally weaker than her. And I can't mm-hmm. admire that in a person. Battle me.
Right.
You want to have a problem. And we both did the same thing, but she went after the other person. Come after me. I'll take right. it for all of us. You go after somebody that's weaker, I can't admire you and I can't be your friend.
Yep, exactly.
Let's see. Did you see the people? So it says Barack Obama, Oprah Winfrey, John Cusack, yes. Affleck. I'm interested to see the bad guys that have the same personality who we would be equal to. Because I do
like
think
Al Capone.
Right. Because I do think that there is a level of power and leadership, right? And can you take this personality and then lead somebody down the wrong path?
Oh, well, of course.
With the same personality.
Well, of course you could. It all depends on what you use the your strengths and weaknesses for.
Right.
Right. In the personality.
So it's the next part. It says, these are your strengths and weaknesses. We'll just go over the strengths really quickly, but I'm more interested in the weaknesses. Tolerance, reliable, charming, altruistic. How do you say that?
Altruistic.
Yeah. So the desire to do good in and for their communities, in their home, on a global stage, and that we're natural leaders. The weaknesses go into overly idealistic. They are more than likely to feel pity for the opposition than anger and can earn a reputation for being naive. Do you agree with that?
Oh my gosh, always. I always think people look at me and go, she's so cute. She's so naive. She has all these big dreams. She's just a dreamer, you know? And it's true. I am a dreamer. I have had visions and dreams about this podcast and where it's going.
Right.
You know, this is more than just like a hobby.
Right.
I see us building this into a real big, huge things. Yes. Mm-hmm. So very idealistic.
And I take this part, especially this last line where they are more likely to feel pity for the opposition than anger. I do that all the time. I mean, I can think of somebody right now that I should be insanely mad at her. She's a liar and she's all kinds of things. However, I can also see her side in certain things and why she's probably made these decisions. And so then I always find myself saying, I feel sorry for so-and-so. And so where it says that you can earn a reputation of being naive, that day that I cried and after hearing that recording at your house, that was something I cried to my husband about, is does this make me weak? Because I can understand somebody else's feelings, is that making me a weaker person? Shouldn't I be stronger and just say, fuck you, this is right, this is wrong, this is the way it should be? So I find myself weak for seeing compassion in other people because I.
But that's not a weakness.
I know, isn't it weird though? But I find I find that to be a weakness in myself.
But it's not, because you're, to be honest with you, you're smarter than if you're, by having compassion or pity for them, you are no longer at anger, which means you're no longer in turmoil with yourself.
Right.
You have chosen your own well-being over them.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. And I understand that the peace that it gives me from not being able to be angry, because in my 20s, I was a very angry person and held on to things. And I like my life now and how lighter I feel, but I do feel weak because of that personality trait that I have. And then,
and I'm going to tell you, you're wrong.
I know. Well, I know I am, but isn't that crazy just to think that I see that as a weakness in myself.
Right. But, and you know, I've always been, so I'm very sensitive, right? I have the very sensitivity part of this. So I don't see crying as a weakness. I see crying as a way for me to deal with the situation that has angered me, because typically I get very angry.
Mm-hmm.
I'll throw some shit if need be, or scream or whatever, and then I cry. And it's a healing process. The crying is part of the healing.
Right.
And if that makes me weak, you can go suck a dick, because I don't give a shit about you.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And so that's the opposite of me. And it's something that our friend Jen asked me about when I went through something, and she wanted to she wanted to make me feel better, but understood that I'm weird about that kind of stuff. And I'm weird about people seeing me upset, or seeing me, God forbid, crying, or like hugging me out of compassion like that, that it makes me feel like a weak individual. And even the other day, I had a terrible, terrible day. I had to walk out of my office. I stood in front of the mirror, and I could see the tears coming in my eyes, and I just kept saying to myself, don't you dare fucking cry. Don't you dare fucking cry. And I had music playing, and I said, just breathe through it. It took me an hour, but I would not allow myself to cry, because I found that to be weak in myself. That's terrible. I know.
It is terrible, because so what could have lasted 15 minutes.
Right.
And you could have solved the problem, because I'm sure it was an emotional problem you were going through.
Yeah, I was just overwhelmed.
And you needed the cry. Right. And you would have felt better, and you would have gone on. But you denied yourself healing.
Yeah.
You denied it. Girl, you need to go talk to your therapist about this.
I know. I agree. I mean, I literally, instead of just talking it out, and talking it out with myself and letting me feel these emotions, that I pushed him down. And I literally stood in the mirror and said, I could see it happening. I was like, don't you dare do this. Don't you do this. You are a professional. You are a strong person. Don't you dare. And strong people cry. And I have to be okay with that. All the
fucking time.
Right.
All the time.
Right. So here's another. So one of the other weaknesses is that we're too selfless, that we're too sensitive. Again, so that goes to their sensitivity to others means that a protagonist sometimes feels problems that aren't their own and try to fix things that they can't fix, worrying if they are doing enough. So that kind of makes me think about, you know, you asking Dion, are you okay? Are you okay? Because are you wondering, like, did I do something? Did I?
Right. It's part of that. And then it's also part of, well, what's wrong? I want to fix the problem if I can.
Right. I agree with the next weakness, which is fluctuating self-esteem. So I had to take some type of mental test when I had gastric bypass, just to see where my head was physically. Do I see myself fat? Do I see myself thin? That way you don't start to lose too much weight and you become anorexic, right? So afterwards, the therapist told me, or the psychologist told me, you have really good self-esteem visually. Like, I visually, even when I was almost 300 pounds, and this is the reason why I've never dated a fat guy, is I always thought I was hot. I always thought I was good looking. I always knew that I deserved the best and what I wanted. And I didn't have a problem with that. The part that I agree with is it says the protagonist defines their self-esteem by whether they are able to live up to their ideas and sometimes ask for criticism more out of insecurity than out of confidence. They're always wondering if they can do better, if they fail to meet a goal or to help someone they said that they could help, then their self-esteem will or their self-confidence will plummet. That's where I agree. I have low self-esteem when it comes to the decisions and things that I make outside of look. I think people think that self-esteem is just looks. I have low self-esteem when it comes to the decisions I make. I always question, all right, I've got A or B. Should I do a podcast? Shouldn't I do a podcast? Should we post the video? Should we not post the video? Did we make the right decision in post constantly?
Yes, abso-fucking-lutely. And I have learned, because I've been doing a lot more social media for a little bit longer than you have, mm-hmm. right? And you know the one thing they tell you? Don't think about it, just post it. Don't right. think about it, just post it. Don't think about it, just post it. So when I'm getting ready to put out a post and I'm doing the, well, what if I do this? What if I did it? I go, fuck it. And I just post it.
Yeah.
You know, and I it's a conscious decision, but we are very much. Do we do this? Do I do that? Do I focus here? What about this? What's the result? What's the contingency plan? How are we going to handle this if this backfires? I mean, I've got 17 different paths going on in my brain at any point.
Right. And that's what the next weakness is struggling to make a tough decision. If caught between a rock and a hard place, protagonists can be stricken with paralyzed. Imagining paralysis. Imagining all the consequences of their actions, especially if those consequences are humanitarian. So again, you're thinking about other people. You're thinking about, you know, the decisions I make affect my family. They affect mm-hmm. my friends. They affect my life as a whole. I'm very aware that I'm not just one person. Sabrina in her 20s was a very selfless person in regards to only caring about herself. Sabrina in her 30s is well aware that I am one person in a family, one person in a friend group, one person in whatever.
Right.
And it can drive me bananas.
And let me tell you what, every time I have a question or I have to make a decision about something, I'm over there talking to Dion. Well, what about this? And how about this? And da, 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 da. And we're talking. And sometimes he's like, but Tab, in the end, it's your decision. And I'm like, I don't like that answer. Give me another one.
Right. That's funny because you know what he's pushing you to do is to make decisions on your own. Which I could see myself doing for you as well, but finding it harder to do on my own.
Well, yes, because you're the exact same way. I would come to you with a problem. You would want to solve the problem, but you realize the problem is me not being able to make a decision. So you would force me to make a decision, but you knowing that you can't make a decision, you wouldn't force yourself to do it.
Yeah, that was a lot of words, but you're fucking nailed it. But you're exactly right. I mean, what you just said is 100% right, which is like the crazy thing when it comes to personalities and what the way that we all operate within one another, right? You can always give somebody else the best advice and not be able to give yourself. Know what's right and what's wrong, and you can't make that choice yep. within yourself. So then the next section talks about being a protagonist and being in a romantic relationship. And it says that there's really no greater joy for a protagonist than to help along the goals of someone they care about. And the interweaving of lives that a committed relationship represents is a perfect opportunity to do that. So I can tell you in my own relationship that has been 16 years as of this March, is that the first 11 years was about making my husband the greatest man that he could be. And for mm-hmm. me, I had more joy in making sure that he got through college, that he obtained his certificates, that he progressed in his career where he makes, you know, 4 or 5 times that he used to. And I found that to be our success.
Right.
Meanwhile, I had stalled in my own career, but that mm-hmm. didn't bother me because I was happy for him and what I was able to help him with. And it had to be him telling me when I finally made the a leap in my career to say, this is your time. Like, we've got me here.
Right.
It's your time to come up here. And that's what the last 4 years of my life has been like, which is new for me to be able to do things for myself and make jumps in my own personal life, because I get greater joy of seeing my husband succeed.
Right. And him being intuitive enough to know that really that's kind of what you were expecting at some point, because you made the self-sacrifice and that you wanted a partner who is also going to turn around and help you get to where you want to be.
So that goes into this section where they talk about the bad side of that personality trait when it comes to romantic relationships, is that if I wasn't married to a good man or a good partner, he would allow me to keep doing that until 20 mm-hmm. years from now, I'm angry because I didn't do these things. And now
right.
I've suppress my own desires to lift him up, which did make me happy.
Correct.
But I also feel like there could have been more for me, right? So if he didn't do that, who knows 20 years from now when it's time to retire, when he gets all this glory and I could have been more, but didn't.
You didn't. And you know what it really reminds me of? Do you remember the movie, The First Wives Club?
Yes, love it.
That is exactly what it's about. These women boosted their husbands up, made them lots of money, helped them when they needed help in the beginning and ran the businesses. And then they got older and the husbands left them for younger women. And they went, well, fuck this. We know how to do it. We did all the hard work. Why do they get all the credit?
Yeah, why do they get all the credit?
Right. And so they came back. And they got their revenge, you know, because these men took advantage of them.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that is a danger zone for somebody with the protagonist personality, is that if you don't match up with the right person, then they really can give their whole life to those other people, which is something I do complain and argue to. Just yesterday I was complaining. I truly live my life for my husband and my kids. And one day last year I asked them what my favorite food was and none of them could guess, because I cook dinner.
It's not about you.
Yeah. I cook dinner for them. They like, you know, ground beef tacos. Well, great. I guess that's what we're eating. It's not my favorite. My favorite is a carnita, but the kids don't. So I could see, and children will be the first to take advantage of it, right? So I could see protagonist parents struggling with this a lot.
Right, getting taken advantage of all the time.
Right. It goes on to say, where it says they rely on conversations about mutual feelings, checking the pulse of their relationship, asking how mm-hmm. things are, and if there's anything else they can do. While this can help keep conflict away, it also risks them being overbearing or over needy, which reminds me of what you just said of Dion. And I constantly do that with Nate too, of not so much of how are you okay? Are you okay? It's can I be doing anything better? I'm always checking. Right. You remember, I mean, I talked about that game that we played within our own family.
Right, exactly.
Of checking everybody's temperature of, am I doing a good job? Can I be doing a better job? What else can I do?
Right.
And
yeah, see, we don't have that. I'm like, what's wrong? If something's wrong, let's address the problem. But he's like, nothing's wrong.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I mean, it could be over something as stupid as his stomach is not hurt. His stomach is upset. And so I check in on him so frequently often that it becomes annoying.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, that's what it says. And it says that it can come off as needy or insecure. When really you're just trying to dial into emotion and see what you can do to help and be helpful.
Right.
Oh, it does say that that a protagonist is so eager to please that it can undermine the relationship, and that can lead to resentment. So I think as two people that have the same traits, that we should be aware of that in our own relationship, right? Like, we're in this for the long haul. Is that the last thing we want to do is to have regrets and resentment 20 years later, like those women in the First Wives Club.
Right, exactly.
Great movie, by the way. I put it up there with the book club. It's one that I watch it all the time. It is
amazing.
Goldie Hawn's is in it. What's the...
Bette Midler,
yeah, great. And Morty, and then that's her husband, Morty. Yeah.
And then it's Diane, Keaton? Not Lane. Yes, Keaton.
Yeah. She's also in the book club, right?
Yes, Diane is.
Yeah. Let's see. So protagonists believe that true happiness is mutual happiness. And I think that's great. I think, you know, my husband and I are happy together. And I do believe, right, like, we both, there's no success in this marriage if one person is happy and the other's not.
Exactly. That is a true, true statement.
So then jumping over to friendship, protagonists will put active efforts into maintaining those connections, viewing them as substantial and important, not something to slip away through laziness or inattentiveness. I think that I could absolutely see that in you. You put stock into your friendships. And
right,
when you get hurt, like the example that we've talked about before with the bridesmaid or maid of honor, is that it becomes something heavy and deeper to you when you lose it.
Yes, exactly. Especially when there's so much built into it.
Right. Right. Yeah, I agree. It's, and I wrote on here that it's, I don't maintain surface friends. I like to be in a relationship and friendship with somebody that is deeper than, hi, how are you? Let's go get drinks. I'm willing to share my thoughts and opinions and feelings with you, but I need it mutually and I need a deep connection with somebody.
Right.
And once I do, I care for you and I'm all in for you.
So I have a weird question for you. So, you know, when you're first making a friend and you guys are talking and you have the long talks, like you talk for 3 or 4 hours, kind of like at the beginning of a relationship. Uh-huh. Do you find that time to be some of the more exciting time in the friendship, like in the beginning?
I mean, I would say that it's probably more exciting, right? But I think just like real life and maybe sex within a marriage, is that the reality is it's impossible to keep that level of friendship.
And right, that intensity.
Right. So that, you know, what I hope is in my friends is that they understand that there are going to be moments of times that I can be all in, and then moments right. of time where it might just be a dribble. It might just be a dabble. It might just be a little. Doesn't mean I don't care as much as I did when we were deep in these conversations.
Right.
However, if you needed me and need to pull me aside and have 3 hours of my undivided time, I will pull out both phones and let's schedule this in and let's do this.
Right, exactly.
But I do think, I mean, everybody thinks that that's the best part, right? I mean, the best parts in the beginning of a relationship when you're getting to know each other.
Right. I just, you know, I always thought that, and I thought it was kind of weird that I would think that about a friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, I mean, we all know it about relationships, but nobody ever talks about it in your friendships.
So I agree with you. And I know that I think of that because I've had my heart broken by a friend. He was my ex-boss. And I can tell you that even though it's a man, that I loved this person. I loved him. I was fully connected and involved, not on a platonic relationship, but I am heartbroken. And so to me, it's not weird to feel like that, because a relationship, whether it's man and woman or romantic or friendship, to me is a connection. And when it's over and it hurts, then it hurts.
Right.
Which is just me maybe being a little too sensitive, right? Is that I get into feelings, and because we like to get into these deep relationships, it means more to us.
than it does to maybe someone else.
Right. I think the thing that works in my benefit is that I've been told that I think more like a man in certain aspects. And so I am able to say like, hey, the black and white is our schedules are our schedules. And this is the way it is, where I think some people get very emotionally connected to, oh, well, she doesn't have time for me, which for, you know, the other person that we all know that nobody's, we're not her priority anymore. I think
right.
This is why we've all had problems connecting with her, because it's surface friendships on her right. side compared to where we were all trying to go and get this deeper understanding and truly build a friendship.
And she didn't want anything to do with it.
Right. And then she's not able to also understand that the amount of time that you and I spend together isn't right. against her.
No, it isn't.
Right. Which people take sensitively if so-and-so's out and we're not out. Like, we were all just talking about this at the Jaguar game the other day, Doreen and Natalie and I, that it's uh-huh. not an attack against you if so-and-so goes to the movies. It just right. means that their schedule's worked out and that you have, but you have to it be extra. I don't know. Friendships are weird, man. And I think of them as breakups. I mean, I get just as, if I lose a friend, I am mourning that relationship to me.
Right. And I completely understand. And, you know, the situation that I went through, Dion got to experience it, and he went to me and he goes, he started getting worried because he's like, why are you so quiet? What is wrong? I'm like, nothing. He's like, no, something is obviously wrong. And I said, look, I am dealing with this.
Mm-hmm.
You can't help me. I need you to let me deal with this. And that means I'm going to be quiet because I am hurt.
Right.
So I'm like, just let me deal with it. Let me process this.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, okay. You know, and he gave me what I needed.
Right. I think, I think it's people try to brush off friendship sometimes. And I think that our personality traits connect us to people. I value the friendships I have. The difference mm-hmm. is, and I know that you're the same way, is when I'm done with somebody, I'm fucking done with them, though.
Oh, absolutely.
And
I always had this saying, I'm like, you can keep doing it, keep pushing my buttons, pushing, crossing that line, but when you, or working up to that line, but when you cross that fucking line, that's it. I'm done. Nothing you can say, nothing you can do will change my mind. It's it. That's it. Especially if you break my trust.
Right.
It's all done.
Right. Yeah, I agree yeah. with that. And I think, and it's heartbreaking though, right? It doesn't make it any less yeah. heartbreaking. I read an article about grief the other day, and I was just taking notes and kind of journaling it out myself. And it wasn't just about my father. It's the grief of a 15-year friendship I lost. And I could get emotional just talking about it now, is that I will always love this person. I will always feel connected to this person.
Right.
I'll always love and cherish the times that we had. The I can understand some of the choices that she's made.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is once you're a liar, and if there's not, to me, there's two sides of every story, but some things are just factual. There's some conversations, thanks to text messages, that fucking happened. And when you lie about it, I can't trust you anymore. And that makes me sad because I know as a person, I'll never be able to go back. Even if they came back, I could never go back. And I grieve that.
Oh, exactly. Because it's time lost. It's friendships lost. And it's memories lost.
Right. It is. I do feel like there's heartbreak and grieving when it comes to friendships.
Yep, absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
So it does say that us protagonists need to chill out, just kind of like men. So in the book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, it talks about what Dion was doing to you. Like, they want to solve it. If I say something that's wrong, Nate wants to fix it for me right away, right?
Right.
Men like to do that. Protagonists like to do the same thing because we're goal driven and we know that they can handle the situation. You just need to do this, that we need to live and let live attitude and just kind of chill out a little bit.
Exactly. Which is sometimes kind of hard for us, but we have to like, okay, I'm not doing this. You know, I think the biggest thing in our personality is that we have to make a conscious effort to put ourselves and our well-being before others.
Right.
Even though that's not what we're taught to do, especially as women.
No, not at all. We're
taught to take care of everybody else, and we're taught that other people's feelings matter and you need to tame yourself down, and you know, and that's not correct.
Right. You're right.
Yeah. And so we get called a bitch for it, but whatever.
Right. So then it goes on to the next category is parenthood. So just quickly, I thought I'd go over this because I agree. It says the balance between encouraging and supporting friends to their children while also working to instill strong values and a sense of personal responsibility. Not bullheadedly telling people what they ought to do, but helping them to explore their options and encourage them to follow their heart. This is the way that I've parented my son, and and what I believe to be successful is that I do have rules, but most of the time I'm just trying to guide him into a decision, and the decision might be ultimately his. And then we can talk about the consequences afterwards, but I'm always asking him, just like with you, why, how, what, why do you feel right. like that? Rather than me just telling them what to do. It's the journey of, well, let's get there. You can do it, but let's get there and let's talk about it. And let's think it through.
Right, exactly. Because you just telling him denies him the lesson that he needs to have.
Right. And us just telling our friends what to do is denying them the journey that they need to have, right? To work on their own weaknesses and strengths within yep. their own personal characters. It does say, while in their weaker moments, they may succumb to a more manipulative behavior. Protagonists mostly rely on their charm and idealism to make sure that their children take their lessons to heart. I could see that. Like I said, that's why I was wondering what the bad people look like in this same character form, because I could see using our strengths to be
charm, very manipulative.
Right, exactly. So that's why I was wondering what the bad guys are. I see myself doing that as a parent or even wife, you know, against my husband. So I wonder what bad guys we
wind up with. We do know you guilted him into having sex with you with a broken leg.
I know, poor man. Poor man. Forced out sex
see,
with me.
Now we see where that comes from.
Yeah, right? Well, I blame it on all the psychology books I read, that it has taught me very well how to mind fuck that man. I just don't physically fuck him. I mind fuck him as well. So let's see. It says the discipline won't necessarily come naturally, which I agree with. I think that comes a little bit from my childhood of just not wanting to be physically or overbearing. But I also don't like rules in some way. I'd like people to, I believe in self-will or your own will. And I believe in your right to make a decision as long as we've got, and I feel like just like T.I., if you've guided them along, she'll make the right decisions. Right.
Right.
And then it says, I wrote, wow. Next to this, as their children enter adolescence, they truly begin to make their own decisions, sometimes contrary to what their parents want. While protagonists will do their best to meet this with grace and humor, they can feel hurt and unloved in the face of rebellion. Protagonists are sensitive, and if their children goes so far as to launch into criticism, they may become truly upset, digging their heels in and locking horns. This is my son and I during his teen years to a T. So much so that I had to drag him to see my therapist. I'm like, there's something wrong with him. There's like, there's nothing wrong with him. There's definitely something wrong with you.
You, right?
Which was basically the conversation of his success and his journey is his journey. And you can guide them, but you cannot control
right
which way he's going.
Yep. And I think that comes from the manipulation, because we're trying to control them to do what we want them to do because we have their best interests at heart. But in the end, when they start making their own decisions, we start to get hurt.
Right. Yeah, I agree. So what a crazy, do you think, are you a protagonist?
Yes.
Me too.
Probably not so much in the parenting section. Mm-hmm. Probably because I don't have children, but.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But everything else?
Oh, yes. Definitely everything else. A lot of me in this.
Yeah, I agree. Are you going to ask Dion to take it?
So, I will ask him to take it. We've done something like this before.
Mm-hmm.
Like this with all the letters and shit. But I don't think I was a protagonist before. I was something else, which is kind of weird.
No, I don't find that to be weird, though. To me, that would show me growth, right?
Right.
And that makes me proud. So I feel like, you know, if you're one way your whole life and never change, I'm sure if I would have taken this test 10 years ago, I definitely am a different person.
Well, that's very true.
Yeah. So I think that's great in your case.
Yeah.
To me, that means you're finding your voice. You're standing up for yourself. You understand your dreams. You understand, right? And that you're uplifting. I think it's a great fucking person. I mean, well, it just happens to match my personality.
As well.
Right.
Dion had said it to me the other day. He goes, your confidence is really growing. And, you know, I am making a lot of changes and that sort of stuff. And he's like, it's really, really great. And he goes, well, I might have to smack down a little bit because it's just getting out of hand.
Well, it does
mean he's kidding.
Right. But that is a thing, right? Is where, and it's something where he has to look, what you told me the other day, is it intimidating or are you intimidated?
Intimidated.
So does that mean as a man and as you're growing, especially because there's an age difference, right? Is your growth. And this is what my mother told me when Nate and I got married was we were to grow up together. And so as I've changed to become somebody else, we have to do this together. And so then Dion has to look at himself and say, okay, well, my wife has grown into this stronger woman. What do I have to do less now? Right. You might not need as much guidance and where you're saying, no, I got it. I can make a decision. I just want you to hear me.
Right. And trust me, he's loving that.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing. I love that.
Oh yeah. He goes and he's like, would you just go ahead and retire me already? He's like, you start making all this money with this podcast. He's like, I'll be your bitch however you want me to be.
Right, right. I think it's a beautiful thing. I mean, that excites me for you and for anybody and the fact that you see that too, that's so important. It's self-recognition of the good and the bad things that are going on in our lives and our personality.
Let's be really honest. Dion had to point some of this out to me because, you know.
Yeah, but that means you're open to it, though.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You're open to receiving it. Receiving something is just as important as coming up with it on your own.
This is very true because he probably would have said this to me 2 years ago. And I'd be like, oh, no, you're just saying that. And now I'm like, yeah, you're fucking right. I am.
Right. And I wonder, too, if, you know, it helps to, because of the steps you're making and the growth that you've made, it will encourage, because I know your husband's personality, to push you even harder a little bit. Where before he might have learned to restrain, where now he's like, listen, I've heard you and Sabrina talking. You can hold your own. So right. I'm going to push you further, too. And how amazing and how exciting it is to see all of this happening. I think it's great. I want to flip just and end on this just because we are in the holidays and it comes up a lot on my page and the people that we listen to about the holiday blues. So we're 2 weeks into December here. Holiday anxiety and depression is a big deal.
Right.
Personally, our friend Doe and I are trying to keep each other out of what I would call our cave. We've dedicated to attending every fucking holiday event between.
I know. That's crazy. I looked at the calendar and I went, you bitches are crazy. I can't keep up with that shit.
Yes, but that's my goal is truly to the way that I am is I will with the early nights and darkness.
Ugh.
I will cave myself up and just put my head in the sand. And we've really challenged each other to get out of the house on the weekends and spend time with one another and not let each other fall into the anxiety or the depression that comes with the holidays. I did read that it comes from, first of all, I heard on the Brilliant Idiot podcast today. Do you realize that like Thanksgiving and Christmas are the 2 days a year where you feel like the biggest loser if you're by yourself?
Yes, I did know that.
Isn't that crazy to think about it? That we've put so much pressure on these two holidays that you are a loser and suffering from FOMO if you're not out with other people on those days.
Well, because they're considered family holidays.
Right.
So if you're not with family, you end up being depressed. And I can tell you, even in my 20s, when I was single and all the holidays were coming up, and yeah, I'd go to my mom's and then I'd come home to an empty house. It was depressing.
Yeah.
I had a family to go to, and that was a step above most people. But I'd still come home and be like, okay, this is great. Fucking nobody's here. It's sad.
Right.
Like, you know, let me just put the freaking Christmas story on again and just gonna sit here and drink.
Right. Yeah. And that's what it talked about, the loneliness because of December and the new year comes on, everybody's kind of self-reflecting and looking at the year. And because instead of being positive people, we look at how much we didn't accomplish this year rather than looking back and saying, you know, yes, this year my father died. Yes, this year I lost this friendship. Yes, this year this might have happened. Instead, go through a list. And this is what Nate and I do for our New Year's resolutions. We don't make resolutions as much as we sit together and we write down separately. We go and sit on the back porch. We write down the highlights of 2019. And then we will read them to each other and we'll say, oh my God, I forgot all about that. That was so much fun. And then so we're reminiscing. And then we write our goals. No, then we go back. I have a list on the fridge that we made our goals for 2019. So we've made goals. So then we go back and go, oh, we did this, we did this, we did this, we did this. So now we're patting ourselves on the back. And then we make lists of what we'd like to accomplish in 2020, whether it's career moves, this move, that move. And we do this every single new year. So, you know, you're looking back and celebrate your accomplishments rather than what we didn't do.
Exactly. I think that's awesome. Yeah. I think I need to convince Dion to do this.
It's fun. I mean, that list is all year long is sitting in the cookie jar on top of our living room or on top of our fridge. And we'll pull it out on January 1st and we take a quiet moment and it's a good time.
So let me ask you this. So what do you guys do if you didn't accomplish any goals for that year?
There's never been a time where we didn't accomplish any goals. Now, I will say for the goals that we don't accomplish, sometimes when you set these goals or resolutions, whatever it might be, the truth is maybe it wasn't that important. Maybe it wasn't that realistic. Maybe you got halfway there. Halfway there is better than not there. So we really try to look at it as not so much as failures. Like I think on the thing was to finish the baseboards in our house was one of my goals. Well, guess what? I didn't get to it. But what I did get to is a really good year of fun weekends that I'm not fucking sad that I didn't do it.
Right, exactly.
I'll put it on my list again next year. These fucking baseboards aren't going anywhere. Now, when I do accomplish it, we'll pat ourselves on the back and say, great job.
You're like, woo!
Yeah, but what I did accomplish was a family vacation to such and such or more quality time with such and such. I'm going to celebrate my successes over my failures. And I just ask everybody, it's easier said than done.
Yes.
But just ask that everybody realizes you have successes this year.
Yes, you do.
You have to look at them as successes.
Right. Absolutely.
And lean on each other. Lean on us. Lean on your friends. Lean on our podcast community. Talk to your friends and say, I'm struggling if you're struggling over these next few weeks.
Oh, of course. And because we're all here and it's the most giving time of the year, right?
Right.
I mean, so everybody's understanding.
I think that's the biggest part is I think most people don't think that we are all understanding. I think they think that people just like me, right? I see softness as weakness. And so it's hard for me to go to somebody else. Doe and I have this relationship where we talk about our mental health a lot. So I feel very comfortable mm-hmm. going to her and say, I'm fucking struggling.
Right.
That,
yeah, exactly.
Find that person, find those people, find our friend group has changed a lot in this year. We all went through things
yeah.
and we all feel yes, we very are. Comfortable talking with one another.
Yeah. Exactly. Even if it's certain people about certain things.
Yeah.
You just still got to find that, you right. know, and everybody knows and understands the depression and the sadness that comes around the holidays. Nobody's immune to it. Even if you are surrounded by a big family and you have no financial problems and at all, you've got a Norman Rockwell family going on, you can still suffer from depression.
And that's what the article said that I read yesterday, is that everybody's going through it and it's a moment in time. There is, which I kind of compare to holiday eating, right? Is people say, well, I'm going to gain 20 pounds over the holidays. The true fact is there's 2 days in this holiday. You should be right. eating like shit all 45 days, people.
Well, that, it's the candy you put out right. for the Christmas. I mean, let's be real.
So, you know, it's, understand that the time is going to come and go, and then it's going to be the new year, and you don't have yep. to stay in this cave. Go in it if you have to, and then come out with your fucking sparkles on and conquer the world.
Exactly. You know, sometimes you just need to go into a cave around the holidays. You're like, I don't want to deal with it. And that's okay.
Yeah, and exactly right. That's okay. So
just don't stay in there.
Right. And if you need help, we're all here. We are all here to help everybody and support women, and whether that brings you
comedy.
Yeah, or men. And if it's just a little bit of comedy you need or something to laugh about or disagree with us about, not a safe space is here for every single one of you.
Exactly. And you guys can email us. We'll always answer you at notasafespacepodcast@gmail.com.
That's right. And don't forget, we're wrapping up here. Don't forget, if you're playing Whamageddon, if you've been knocked out, to let us know on our Facebook page. And I think
how
that's
you
it.
Got knocked out.
Oh, we yeah. We want to know how. Who was the asshole that played the song?
Exactly. Because we know it was an asshole friend.
We're naming names, people. Naming names. Oh, yeah. We're not scared. All right, girl. I love you. Okay. I think that was it.
Sounds good. Have a great day.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.